Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. La Mesa's City Council voted to snuff out electronic cigarettes Tuesday night, prompting one council member to light up in protest. By a 4-1 vote, the council majority voted to restrict electronic cigarettes in the same manner that regular cigarettes are already regulated. The only no vote came from Councilwoman Christine Alicio, who lit up an e-cigarette and then a standard cigarette to compare the vapor and smoke levels that wafted across the council chambers. In so doing, the councilwoman actually committed a misdemeanor, since smoking cigarettes indoors in a public place is already illegal in La Mesa. The plume sent Councilman Ernie Ewing coughing and retreating off the council floor, complaining that Alicio's smoke aggravated his allergies. La Mesa's political leaders won't have to endure smoke-filled rooms anymore in the future, however, since puffing e-cigarettes in public places will now be prohibited. Council instructed staff to draw up the ordinance for final approval at the next council meeting. The majority of speakers voiced support for banning e-cigarette use in public areas. La Mesa now joins El Cajon, San Diego, and other cities in regulating use of the devices. Reasons cited include public health and the growing use of e-cigarettes by children, including some products sold with candy flavors and cartoon characters that appear to be targeting minors. Councilwoman Ruth Sterling initially voiced concerns about government regulation of private activities such as smoking, but ultimately voted with her colleagues, Mayor Art Madrid, Councilman Ernie Ewing, and Councilman Mark Arapostathis in favor of the ordinance. Arapostathis indicated some local restaurants have voiced support for keeping e-cigarettes from annoying their non-smoking patrons. Alicio, however, sided with preserving freedoms for smokers over protecting children and others from potential health risks of e-cigarettes, which can contain nicotine and other toxins. In addition to this hot topic, the council also voted on issues involving expenditure of funds. Council members Ewan and Alicio pushed through a measure to require council members to get advance permission for expenditures as small as a postage stamp, while conversely supporting a measure to spend public funds to hire a public relations professional for the city of La Mesa. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Blackwater, the private military contractor that has sparked considerable controversy through the years, is back in the headlines. Many East County residents recall the successful battle waged by residents in Rio Potrero to prevent Blackwater from building a paramilitary training camp there. Potrero residents recalled all five planning group members who voted for the Blackwater facility and staged a march through adjacent federal forest lands that would be threatened by the project, drawing international attention before Blackwater ultimately withdrew its plans. Now the New York Times reports that back in 2007, Blackwater blocked a State Department inquiry into allegations of violence against civilians by the company's personnel. The investigation was halted after Blackwater's top manager in Iraq threatened that he could kill the government's chief investigator and that no one could or would do anything about it, according to State Department records. The New York Times article states, U.S. Embassy officials backed Blackwater, telling the State Department personnel to leave the country because they had disrupted the embassy's relationship with the security contractor. The documents reveal Blackwater had been hired to protect U.S. diplomats, though they had been likened by critics to mercenary soldiers trained to kill. The chief investigator returned to Washington, D.C., where he wrote a scathing report to the State Department documenting misconduct, including negligence by Blackwater employees, and warned that lax oversight of the company could lead to liability since the company considered itself above the law. Just a few weeks later, Blackwater guards shot and killed 17 civilians in Baghdad's Nisour Square, inflaming resentment among Iraqis over the U.S. military presence. Four Blackwater guards involved in those shootings are now set to stand trial, though charges against five other guards in a prior case were dismissed in 2009. There have been serious ramifications from this failure to rein in these and other abuses linked to Blackwater, which has also been blamed for an incident that fueled the bloody siege of Fallujah. That incident occurred after Blackwater guards defied orders to remain within a protected zone, traveling outside to fetch pots and pans for a military officer. They were seized by insurgents and killed. Their bodies hung off a bridge, triggering the siege of Fallujah in retaliation. The shootings in Baghdad were a key reason why Iraqi's newly formed government later refused to approve a treaty allowing U.S. troops to stay in the country with immunity from prosecution after 2011. The 17 victims of those shootings included a 9-year-old boy. Blackwater first claimed they fired back in self-defense, but U.S. officials who investigated found zero evidence of any insurgents at the scene, and federal prosecutors accused Blackwater's convoy of shooting without cause into the crowd using machine guns and grenade launchers. Blackwater's founder, Eric Prince, claimed he was never told about the death threat reportedly made by a Blackwater representative against the chief investigator for the U.S. State Department, the New York Times reported. Blackwater forced its workers to sign a military-type oath to battle the war on terror. Prince sold the company in 2010. Blackwater later, through several name changes, most recently emerging as Castellas Holdings after merging with Triple Canopy, a private military security officer that was a rival. There were more troubling allegations. One investigation found Blackwater guards carried weapons that they hadn't been certified to carry or authorized to use. Allegations of boozing and womanizing surfaced, as well as concerns that Blackwater overbilled the federal government, failed to properly maintain vehicles, and scrimped on the size of its security detail protecting U.S. diplomats. The company was also accused of filthy living conditions for its workers. The threat against Chief U.S. Inspector Gene Richter was reportedly made by Daniel Carroll, Blackwater's project manager in Iraq, during a meeting in August 2007 over complaints that included cleanliness and food quality served up at Blackwater's compound. Richter wrote in his report to the State Department that Carroll, a former Navy SEAL, stated that he could kill me at that very moment, and no one could or would do anything about it as we were in Iraq. He said he was alarmed by the threat. Richter's statement was confirmed by a witness. All three men declined to speak with the Times for its article. Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State at the time under President George W. Bush, appointed a panel to investigate the Nisour Square shooting and recommended reforms, but strangely, the panel's members never interviewed Richter or the witnesses about the threats. Yet a State Department official later told reporters that many people had been interviewed and found no indications of concern about Blackwater's conduct before the Nisour shootings. Martin Eder, founder of Activist San Diego, which owns KNSJ Radio, was a leader in the opposition to Blackwater's efforts to set up a training camp in Potrero. East County Magazine show host and editor Miriam Raftery was the leading reporter covering the Blackwater saga in Potrero with a series of investigative reports. Their efforts helped to draw international media attention to the issue at the very time when Blackwater was fast gaining notoriety in Iraq. Raftery formed East County Magazine in part due to censorship imposed by other local media on the controversies involving Blackwater, with one local paper refusing to run any more Blackwater stories just weeks before the recall election in Potrero. Locally, ouster of Blackwater from Potrero was not the end of the company's local involvement. Blackwater went on to open an indoor shooting range in Otay Mesa. A similar company formed by a former Blackwater official leased land to train paramilitary personnel on the Los Coyotes Indian Reservation until the Eagle Fire led to tribal efforts to revoke the lease. Blackwater or its offshoots also received contracts to train officers for some local law enforcement departments here in San Diego County, as well as at other locations as part of its global operations. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. I am here at the Border Angels office in San Diego with Enrique Morones, who has been heading up efforts to help these immigrant families from Central America that are currently arriving in San Diego. Enrique, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with all of you, and thank you for your great work in the community with the show. And San Diego, Tijuana, thank you very much for supporting these refugee children. They're all of our children, and we got to continue to treat them with love.
Outside, the place is just bustling with volunteers, sorting through load after load after load of supplies that people from all over the place have been generously bringing in. So, Enrique, can you tell us how many supplies are you receiving now for the immigrant children and families that are arriving from Central America?
First of all, thank you for inviting me to your show, and it's been an incredible process because we've done this many times before when we've had emergencies, when we had the 2007 wildfires. We collected about 500 SUVs full of supply, took over Chicano Park, and we had to set up distribution points all over the county.
Yeah, a lot of grateful fire survivors out there.
That's right.
That.
And then we had the earthquake in Mexicali a few Easters ago. We delivered 15 tons of supplies directly to the people in the valley, and we're very worried about the current earthquake situation now.
But yeah, this, for our listeners that may not have heard, there was an earthquake this morning. We're recording this Tuesday, right on the border of Guatemala and Mexico. And Guatemala is one of the three countries where many of these refugees immigrants are coming in from right now.
But as far as this particular situation, the humanitarian crisis, as President Obama rightfully called, it's been a humanitarian crisis for a long time, with people that have been crossing into this country looking for two things, basically. One, they want to be able to feed their family, or two, to be with their family. And now there's a third issue, and that's they want to be able to live, because there's the danger that if they don't leave, they're going to be killed by some of these violent drug cartels in Central America and organized crime to satisfy the consumption of the American market. Mm. So the Mexican migration, unauthorized migration to the United States, has dropped dramatically in the last 3.5 years, 40% drop. We are no longer the number one group of people that come into this country without visas. Now it's the Central Americans. And the Central Americans have always crossed through the east, through the Texas border. And what's caught the people's attention is that a lot of these Central Americans are children. Yeah. 50,000 plus this past fiscal year, it'll reach 85,000. And they're not traveling by themselves. They're traveling not with a family member. That's why they say unaccompanied. But I cannot fathom being in such a desperate situation that I'll turn my son or daughter over to a complete stranger because they're going north. But if I don't do that, the children might die.
Yeah, so, it has to be just heartbreaking for the parents that are having to send the children there and, you know, not knowing what's going to happen. How young are these children that are coming into our region?
So these children that are coming, they're of all ages, but the children that are the unaccompanied minors, so they call them, these refugees, are 17 and under. And we've welcomed them here in San Diego for a long time. There's a couple of shelters that have been here for a long time. We work with those shelters for more than 10 years. And the Texas facilities are over capacity. They've maxed out. They started sending the children and the moms to Arizona. They're maxed out. Now they're coming to California. So last Tuesday in Murrieta, three buses arrived there after they had landed in San Diego. And I went there just to be an observer. And I saw the 50 protesters across the street. They have every right to protest. It was the same group, that same former Minuteman group that was in Escondido, and they used to harass people in various places.
Yeah, and we covered this. We had a story on this last week where there were some very racially charged things that were said, and the buses actually turned around and wound up coming back to San Ysidro here in San Diego because of it.
Yeah, but they did because the police turned them back, not the protesters. The protesters did not turn back the buses. It was the police. The police stopped the buses while the protesters were on the street, on the sidewalk. And I asked the police guy, I said, why are you stopping the buses in front of the protesters? And he goes, oh, we got it under control. And then one guy gets off the sidewalk, goes in front of the bus, starts banging his American flag.
That must have been terrifying for the children and the families inside.
And I said, aren't you going to remove that guy? And he goes, we got it under control. And then you have two or three. Finally, you have about 25, half the protesters and some of the media people gather in front of the bus. And they're screaming and yelling and saying all these racial things. And the children, of course, don't speak the language, but they understand the hate. And you could see children crying through the window. It was really horrific. It was the worst of the American spirit, what happened that day. And this could turn around the immigration debate because the people saw it and they go, that's what our country represents. That's what the whole world is watching. As you heard a moment ago, I had a call from Germany. We had people from Japan here yesterday.
Yeah,
the whole world is watching.
By contrast, How has the reception been for these families and children here in San Diego, Enrique?
So we're not Marietta. We're not Escondido, as we mentioned in the press conference we held a couple of days ago. And San Diego likes to toot itself as the America's finest city. Let's tout itself. Well, let's see if it really is. Now we're seeing the response. We have received more than 10 tons, I would say more than 12 tons of supplies just since the ugly incident of Tuesday.
Wow.
And as you can see out the window there, it's nonstop.
Yeah, you've got a team of volunteers.
People are coming from all over.
Sorting.
People are coming from all over to drop off some supplies. Today we launched Operation Teddy Bear. So we're collecting stuffed animals so we can give them to the children as they're leaving their processing, whether it's at the federal building or at the Border Patrol station. We want to be ready for them.
What is still needed if people want to come down, volunteer, donate? Can you give us an idea of what can be done for those who want to help?
We are collecting stuffed animals right now. We need stuffed animals. We still need children's clothes, blankets, children's and adults' backpacks, mm-hmm. sleeping bags. Just imagine you're forced out of your house and you're with your child. What are they going to need? We have a lot of food, so we received a lot of food. We received a lot of men's clothes. Right now we're looking mm-hmm. for women's clothes and children's clothes, and those are immediate needs. And just stay current on our Facebook and on our website so we can tell you what the immediate need might be.
Now, how many Central American immigrants have come into the San Diego region in recent days, the last couple of weeks, and how many more do we anticipate maybe coming in? Do you have any handle on that, Enrique?
There's been over 52,000 Central Americans that have turned themselves into Border Patrol agents in Texas, and the planes from Texas to here just started.
These are people who come to the border and are basically asking for asylum, or at least many of them?
Today we had the third plane, just about an hour ago it landed, mm-hmm. and each plane has about 140 people, of 40 women and 100 children. And as I mentioned previously, these are people that have turned themselves into Border Patrol.
Right.
And so they're continuing to come. They haven't been unaccompanied. There's been people traveling with their family member. I think that's going to change. There will be some unaccompanied children as well. But we need to have the adequate facilities here, and that's what we're all working on.
Right. Many unaccompanied children, I believe, have turned up across the border in Texas, but the first wave of these refugees that are coming to San Diego have been the families, not the children alone. Is that...
It's been the mother with the children, but I think that the children are going to be coming unaccompanied here pretty soon.
So we will have some young children alone in need of help. Are any of these families being housed right now in any of the East County facilities out there that Border Patrol
could be?
Or ICE
we don't have that information. They're housing them in various detention facilities, so there could be.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we have three. You know, this is the main point of operation. In the south, in the Southern California, I should say, at the Border Angel offices at 2258 Island Avenue. And we've collected over 12 tons of clothes. But we are setting up shelters in North County at the Unitarian Church in Solana Beach, in the South County at the MAC Project in Chula Vista on 3rd Avenue. And we are looking for places in East County. So, we need a place where people can drop things off, that they can receive donations out in East County someplace.
Now, what about the families themselves? Once they are processed by Border Patrol or ICE, and then I understand that most of them can be released and have to report back somewhere in 3 weeks for an immigration hearing to determine whether they can stay or whether they will be deported. Is there a need for temporary housing for any of these people?
There may be, but in that scenario, which is the correct scenario, they don't wait here. They go to where the hearing's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So when they have that family member across the country, that's where they go.
Right.
And they wait there the 3 weeks. They don't wait here.
Okay.
So we've had calls. You heard a call a moment ago from Chicago. We've had calls from all over the country because they know that these families are going to be going elsewhere, especially out of California, because the largest population in San Diego of Latinos is Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
But you go to places like the state, like Washington, D.C., for example, there's a huge population of El Salvadorians. Or you go to another community where there's a large population of Guatemalans and so forth. Not that there isn't any of them here. There are, but the majority are elsewhere. So we are setting up contacts across the country.
Okay, so a lot of them that are coming here, this is only temporary. They're passing through while they try to get to families that are in other parts of the country.
That is correct.
Okay, very good. What else would you like our listeners to know, Enrique, about
just to know that we really appreciate all the support that we've received from this community on both sides of the border. We had the beautiful concert, binational concert yesterday at the border with the symphony and Orquesta Baja California. That was fantastic. And So we want to be sure that that we continue with that support. We're going to be having a bi-national communion next Sunday at Friendship Park at 1:30. Stay posted on the Facebook and on the website about the things that we have, because things keep on coming up. I had a call a moment ago that I got a return from the Lonely Boys. They're a group. They want to do something with us. We had an Academy Award nominated actor yesterday that joined us at Friendship Park. He was the star of A Better Life.
What was his name?
Adrien Bichette. And he was here with us yesterday. And we're having more and more people contact us. Josefina Lopez, Lila Downs, Julieta Venegas. We want to help. What can we do? We're going to be having a concert with Lila Downs in August. So there's lots of activity, and you can all participate, and we need everybody's help, because this is a worldwide situation, and we know that most undocumented people don't come to the United States. They go to other countries. But when they do come here, we should help, because these children coming from Central America, U.S. policies sparked that in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan and helping fuel these civil wars in the countries and Iran-Contra and all that. These are the grandkids of those people. So we planted those seeds as a country, and we need to now, like they say, you reap what you sow. You're seeing it in Iraq now with what George Bush did. Yes. Now you're seeing it here with what Ronald Reagan did. So we need to be open-armed, open-heart, and willing to take in these families and these children and show them love. You can't go see them? Okay, well, come to our offices and drop things off, and we'll keep everybody posted about what is taking place.
Very good. And what is your website and phone number, Enrique, if people want to?
Sure, the website is borderangels.org, www.borderangels.org, and they can call 619-269-7865, and then just look up Border Angels for Facebook, and it's the pound sign and then Border Angels, and you can find out more information about Border Angels on Facebook as you can on the website. www.borderangels.org, and then we'll keep you posted on what's taking place.
Well, very good. I want to thank you very much, Enrique, for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Mary, thank you very much. Thanks for all your support, and thanks for the great work that you're doing, and congratulations on the anniversary. I think you're celebrating or about to celebrate the one-year anniversary. I was there for the first show with Martin, Etter, and everybody, so congratulations, and keep it going.
Well, thank you very much.
Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez from San Diego, along with other members of the California Latino Legislative Caucus, toured a facility housing hundreds of unaccompanied Central American refugee youth at a naval base in Ventura County. The children are among thousands who have sought asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border, giving themselves up to border authorities after reportedly fleeing violence in their homelands. Assemblywoman Gonzalez made the following statement in response to her observations. I was pleased to see clean, adequate dorms, and even happier to see content, well-behaved children learning English and exercising, awaiting reunification with their parents and families in the United States, the Democratic legislator said. The Ventura County facility is just for 13 to 17-year-old youths who have a family member or sponsor already identified in the United States. But, Gonzalez adds, I remain concerned about the younger children who cannot communicate their situation as easily and the youth who have come fleeing violent circumstances in their native countries without a family here. The youth housed at the Ventura County facility are processed quickly, about 2 weeks in and out, Gonzalez says. But she concludes, the 575 kids we saw today and others like them should have the opportunity for due process in immigration court and not just be immediately deported. I'm hopeful our president will require the federal government to continue to abide by the 2008 law that processes these refugee youths in a manner that includes this due process. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. My very special guest today is Lenore Perez, and she is the Artistic Projects Manager for the San Diego Symphony. Lenore, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you're here today to tell us about some very exciting free public concerts that the symphony is putting on in a series called Your Song, Your Story. Tell us what that's all about and how it got started.
Sure. We're so excited. Last night we had our first debut performance of Your Song, Your Story. It was made possible by a generous grant from the Irvine Foundation. 2 years ago, we started the process of collecting songs, stories, and dances from San Diego's diverse communities. We got a total of 320 of those and created an original composition from that.
Wonderful. And then I understand that you're going out to some of these diverse communities and disadvantaged communities specifically for these performances. And I have a list of where they're going to be. First one, of course, already happened at the Jacobs Music Center. The next one is going to be on Tuesday, July 15th at the Joan Kroc Theater, which is right here, just one block east of La Mason University. The next one will be Wednesday, July 16th down at the Embarcadero Marina Park in San Diego. And the last one will be on Thursday, July 17th at Lincoln High School.
That's correct, and we're very, very excited to be able to offer this programming for free to anyone who's interested in participating. And what's even greater than that is that they get to come an hour and a half ahead of time and enjoy in the block party that will provide free food and entertainment for all.
Well, that sounds marvelous. Now, the entertainers include people from all over, and I see on the list that we have some groups I recognize from East County. That includes the Kumeyaay Youth Bird Singers from our Native American community and also the Soaring Eagles, Louay Youssef of St. Peter's Chaldean Catholic Church. There's the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir, and then there's a lot of others, all different kinds of dance and vocal. And tell us what else.
Well, you know, I would like to say that the symphony is very well aware that there are many communities that do not come to the symphony, either because it's cost prohibitive or too far away, or maybe they're not as interested in symphonic music as the symphony would like it to these communities to be. So we have spent the last year in collecting these videos, getting to know those communities better, including your wonderful East County community, and finding ways to make it possible, you know, for them to come and for us to support their expression of their cultural song, stories, and dances.
Wonderful idea.
So one of the exciting finds we had was the Chaldean community here in El Cajon. Mm-hmm. It was so interesting to find one of the people on our committee is a military veteran.
Really?
And he stated that there are about 47,000 military veterans in San Diego County, mm-hmm. and there are as many refugees, Chaldeans, here in El Cajon. Yet they're somewhat hidden away from the people who do not live in East County. And it was a wonderful way to integrate them and bring them out to the symphony and introduce them to a larger community in San Diego.
Well, marvelous. I know that they have some wonderful musical talents out there. I've heard some of their choral performances and things. So that's a wonderful way to bring them in to the symphony.
Yes, I was very fortunate to meet Louay Youssef, who's actually the musical director for St. Peter's Church and very popular in the community. Mm-hmm. He has his own band. And he submitted a few videos, of which Bill Conti decided to pick one.
Yeah, now Bill Conti, let's talk about him for a moment. What you did was you took all of these different videos and performances and original compositions that people from all over the San Diego community submitted, and then you went to Bill Conti, who is an Academy Award-winning artist, and you asked him to create an orchestral score from it.
That is correct. It was a big job because, as you know, these different forms are very different. The styles are very different. And, you know, they have cultural meaning. So it's you have to be very delicate about how you take this music and integrate the symphony piece without violating any of that special meaning and expression mm-hmm. that these communities have. In addition to that, you have to integrate live performers and some of the video that was submitted originally. That was a big job. But if anybody could do this, Bill Conti is the man. He is a film composer.
Listeners, if his name sounds familiar to you, he wrote, among other things, the score for the movie Rocky, the James Bond movies, some of them. What else?
Well, he's also done television, the Dynasty television show. Ah, he's done that theme.
John Forsythe.
Cagney and Lacey, the Olympics theme. The list is very, very long. He's been around for many years, very respected, and perhaps not known by name, but you know his work. You hear it all the time and everywhere. So we were so honored to have him take on this work, this challenge of integrating all of these song, stories, and dances, and he did a beautiful job. Mm-hmm. There was a review written on the production last night. We were honored to have Jim Shoot from the UT there, and what's important to note is that, again, it was that finding that delicate balance of supporting the expression of this art without necessarily overstepping into that art and changing it necessarily. Right. So it was wonderful, and we hope that more people will come to the performances next week. We had a whole mm-hmm. full house last night. I was very surprised as I was driving in. It was still
fabulous. I worked for the symphony myself many years ago, back mm-hmm. in the era when they were teetering on bankruptcy, just before they got the wonderful symphony hall that was built with a big donation back then. So it's marvelous to see them sort of surging back to life and keeping symphonic music alive and bringing it forth to reflect the community and, you know, the different cultural values that we have today. It's not all just Mozart or something that was written hundreds of years ago anymore.
You know, what's interesting is we did get a bunch of emails this morning from different people who were there. One who said he had been at the symphony, but his family had not, and he thought this was a good way to introduce his family to the mm-hmm. symphony. They found it really a wonderful experience and really felt validated by the symphony because this person's culture was being recognized. But he also said that he and his wife were now going to look at the symphony calendar and pick a few of the regular symphonic concerts to attend.
Marvelous.
And then he said the symphony is now part of our family. So, you know, it's an interesting way to introduce a different kind of music to a different community.
Well, you know, years ago, the symphony used to come do performances out at the East County Performing Arts Center, which it's been said has the finest acoustics of any theater in San Diego County, or did at that time. They're getting ready to reopen it next year. Do you think we might see the symphony come back out there again, maybe with performances like this one?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I actually called them to see if we can come out and perform one of the four performances that we were going to do for this production. Mm-hmm. And I learned that you were closed and in the middle of renovation. So had you been open, we would have been there for sure.
Yeah. Oh, well, wonderful. Well, we hope when El Cajon gets it back open next year, as promised, that we'll be able to come out and see and review some symphony concerts out there at that time.
Well, it is, again, a grant-funded project, so we're hoping to apply for another grant or find the funds to make it possible for the symphony to travel outside of its normal venue.
Marvelous. Listeners, if you didn't catch all the dates and times of these performances, we are going to be posting those today on our website. You can find them at eastcountymagazine.org in our arts and music section. Thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, and I just want to emphasize it's free. Both attending the concert is free, and there is a pre-concert reception block party with food and entertainment, so I encourage everyone to come out.
Well, wonderful. I'm definitely planning to be there, and maybe we'll see some of our listeners out there as well.
Thank you.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Now you can sip a Chardonnay or a sample of Sangiovese while perusing produce and other food items at your local farmer's market. Starting immediately, a new bill signed into law today by Governor Jerry Brown legalizes wine tasting at farmers markets for winemakers. The new law opens up opportunities for dozens of wineries that have sprouted up in San Diego's East County and even more countywide. Tastes will be limited to 3 ounces per person under Assembly Bill 2488, which passed the legislature unanimously. Wine tasting must be separated from other areas at the markets by a rope or other barrier. Previously, estate-grown wines could be sold but not sampled at farmers' markets. The wine industry contended that this hurts sales since customers are accustomed to trying wines before they buy. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting this week's Destination East County. We have some hot summertime events this week, from a dive-in movie to Descanso Days, a pet parade in Campo, and an extreme horsepower classic cruise night revving up in El Cajon. We also have previews of some events coming later in the month, from twilight walks at Mission Trails to wine pairings in Ramona, and from live theater atop Mount Helix to a family campout complete with stargazing in Lakeside. If you're sweltering in this summer heat, you can stay cool at the Salvation Army Croc Center's Hot Croc Nights, which kick off this week with the first in a series of dive-in movies. Guests are given inner tubes to float in the pool while watching a family movie. This week's dive-in movie will be held Wednesday night, July 9th at 7:15. Additional movies are set for July 30th and August 13th. The dive-in movies are free for members of Croc Center with a minimal fee for non-family members. For details, you can visit croccenter.org. That's Croc spelled K-R-O-C. This week in downtown El Cajon, Wednesday night's Cajon Classic Cruises will have the theme Extreme Horsepower on July 9th. And then on Thursday night, July 10th, the 80s All-Stars Band will perform a Beach Boys tribute at El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert series from 6 to 9 p.m. If you dine at one of downtown El Cajon's restaurants Thursday night, you can bring your receipt to the concert and enter a drawing for a Taylor guitar. You must be present to win, and there will also be vendors with foods ranging from barbecues to shaved ice, plus a giant slide for the kids. You can visit downtownelcajon.com for details. Lindo Lake Park in Lakeside will be showing outdoor movies at dusk on July 11th, when Monsters University will be on the big screen. You can bring a beach chair, blankets, and, of course, popcorn. Lindo Lake Park is located on Lindo Lane in Lakeside. On July 10th, Santee Lakes is having nighttime fishing from 5 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. on Lakes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Bring a lantern and enjoy the peace and quiet of fishing under the stars. No radios are allowed, and no fishing licenses are required, though there is a small fee to participate. For more information, you can visit SanteeLakes.com. The Santee Firefighters Fishing Derby is set for Saturday, July 12th at Santee Lakes from 6 p.m. to 11 a.m. Derby participants will receive a free day permit, worms, a raffle ticket, hot dog lunch, and free door prizes while they last. The fishing derby is open only to children ages 3 to 17 years old. Adults can help bait and cast, but not fish. Loaner poles are available with ID, and pre-registration is required. You can register online at SanteeFirefighters.org. The Descanso Days Parade rolls out this weekend, and you're invited to the 45th annual Descanso Days, which also includes a fair. It will be held Saturday, July 12th, and this popular annual backcountry event takes place at the historic Descanso Town Hall. This year's parade theme is Bonnets and Boots, with prizes for the best parade entries in various categories. The parade starts at 10 a.m., but roads close at 9:30, so be sure to arrive early if you go. You can also listen to live music while you enjoy pit barbecued beef cooked up by those master chefs of the Pine Valley Mountain Riders. Just Friends will start the musical lineup with Bluegrass Twang at 11 a.m., followed by Steve Hill and the Hill Country Band on the KSON Flatbed Stage from 1 to 5 p.m. There will be other activities for kids, including wheelbarrow races and egg toss, and a nail-driving contest, as well as a best bonnet competition for all ages. You can also try your luck at raffles and a silent auction, where the prizes range from bales of hay to a family visit to Disneyland. With the scent of lavender in the air this weekend, a golden sunset and colorful fields of lavender as a backdrop, Gregory Page will perform at the Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center. The Super Full Moon Jazz Concert will be held on Saturday, July 12th from 7 to 9:30 p.m., Guests are invited to bring a picnic dinner and enjoy an evening with Paige, winner of the 2012 San Diego Music Awards Best Jazz Album for Shine, Shine, Shine.
Page performs melodies and lyrics reminiscent of the 1920s sweet jazz era as a super full moon rises over those lavender fields. Reservations are required. For tickets information, you can visit kclfarm.com. That's Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center. Kids of all ages are invited to join the fun and showcase their pets at the first annual Pet Parade and St. Adelaide Parish Family Festival July 12th at the Campo Baseball Field. The parade starts at 11 a.m. and the festival runs from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Parade entrants are invited to decorate a wagon or stroller for your pet or walk with pets on a leash. Pre-registration is required by the day before. Prizes will be awarded for most creative and entertaining costumes. Drawings will also be held for prizes, including half a steer to fill your freezer, donated by the Wright Ranch in Potrero. The festival also includes vendor booths, an inflatable slide and water combo, face painting, and refreshments. Now for a preview of some hot events coming up soon. Santee Summer Concerts lineup for their Blues and Barbecue Night on Thursday, July 17th next week will include the Mercedes Moore Band and the Bayou Brothers with special guest Bill McGee. Festivities start at 5:30 and there will be blues, barbecue, and a beer garden. This event is held at Santee's Town Center Community Park East. Les Miserables, the summer blockbuster, will be staged atop Mount Helix starting July 17th through August 2nd. Christian Community Theater is returning to Mount Helix after being away for 7 years. Theatergoers will see Les Mis with views of San Diego as the surrounding backdrop. Les Miserables is the world's longest-running musical. You can discover a nation in the grip of revolution where convict Jean Valjean is on the run. He must leave his past behind and keep his vow to raise the young orphaned Cosette. But with revolution in the air, Jean Valjean has no choice but to fight for his life and sacrifice everything to protect the people he loves. You can get ticket information at christiancommunitytheater.com. You're invited to join Mission Trails Regional Park Guides this summer for free Saturday evening guided walks in the park to learn about changes that occur as the sun goes down. The walks last about an hour and a half and start from the parking lot across from Kumeyaay Campground. The next one is July 19th at 7:15 p.m., and there will be others August 16th and September 20th. There's also an owl prowl, and you can sign up for that at mtrp.org. Then starting July 23rd, the Salvation Army Croc Center's Hot Croc Nights kicks off its family ice skating sessions, which will be held each Wednesday through the end of August. You can beat the heat with special discount rates. Croc Center is located on University Avenue, just one block west of La Mesa. And you can get more info at croccenter.org. And then at Oak Oasis Preserve Campground in Lakeside, a free family campout and star party will be held Friday and Saturday, July 25th and 26th. You're invited to join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association and park staff to use telescopes and view stars and planets from 8 to 10 p.m. If you plan to camp over, be there by 7 to set up by sunset. Camping gear, warm clothes, and a flashlight are recommended. Campfires will be permitted with wood provided by the park, and there are restrooms and showers on site. You can RSVP to alex.gilbert@sdcounty.ca.gov. And Ramona Ranch is hosting a fruit, herb, and cheese and wine pairing on July 26. Trizette's Catering will serve up the tasty array paired with artisan wines on Saturday, July 26 from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Ramona Ranch Winery. The menu includes nectarines with tarragon feta cheese paired with an orange muscat, plums with a lavender goat cheese paired with a Sangiovese rosé, and strawberries with basil blue cheese paired with ranch Syrah. For more information on this event, you can visit RamonaRanch.com. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you want information on sponsoring Destination East County's show on KNSJ, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County!
The California Highway Patrol is seeking witnesses to a vehicle accident on July 4th that injured 3 children. The children suffered moderate to major injuries in a rollover crash at 1:09 p.m. Friday on Interstate 15 north of State Route 52. The driver told the California Highway Patrol that he was traveling at 65 to 70 miles per hour in the number one lane when he felt the right rear of his Toyota vehicle sink. The Toyota hit the center divide and rolled onto its roof. The three young passengers in the vehicle were transported to Rady's Children's Hospital. A six-year-old girl suffered major injuries, while two girls ages 5 and 9 sustained moderate injuries. All of the children are from Escondido, said Officer Jake Sanchez with the CHP. This collision remains under investigation. If you witness this accident, you are asked to please call Officer Lowry in the CHP's San Diego office at 619-220-5492. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip, to the hospital.
I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant, and then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter, and then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks, and so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what, prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was, I tried to be a bull rider, thought maybe I could make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we buck some bulls and stuff, and so we took turns being the bullfighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so you can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that one. Put you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said early on, is just the satisfaction that you've did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players, but it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer, so you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your?
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed off bull, because, you know, that happens to me a lot, give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they've got a big old body and they got to bend in half to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get to break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. You have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring them away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say, that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school. And the guidance counselor, I've noticed, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern-day rodeo, we have schools, and the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah, what's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay, the barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena. Actually, not quite the middle of the arena. It's a little closer to the bucking shoes. And it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land. They can come there, catch their breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's gonna do what he wants to do. He's going to do this. So you're going to be put in a position where you're going to get in there that you're probably going to get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I've never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Okay, Cody?
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors, you see, if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it. And that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow the cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.